Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to the Life and Leadership Gap Analysis series. On this series, we're talking about closing the gap on what we know intellectually and what we do when we're in the middle of the action. We are exploring the principles in motion, getting back to the basics by visiting all the greats that we know and love, like Stephen Covey, Jose and Don Miguel Ruiz, and Patrick Lencioni, to name a few. In fact, this conversation is part of a 12-part series where we are exploring the 7 habits of highly effective people and the 5 agreements. Our intention was to bring together inspired minds for meaningful discussions about the principles of life and leadership and to explore the gap between what we know and how we are living and leading these principles. Are you sharpening your saw, like Stephen Covey would say? Can you say that you're truly impeccable with your word, like Don Miguel Ruiz would say? We're your hosts. I'm Charmaine Hammond, joined by Christine LaPerriere with Leaders in Motion. We both work together to inspire and develop healthy, well-developed teams. I've worked in the correctional system, oil companies, nonprofits, and everything in between. Christine has worked with everything from for-profit, from manufacturing vehicles to growing consumer packaged goods. Really, our experience has covered all bases. We're really delighted to have our guest with us today, David Irvine, who is a connector and a communicator. David has spent his life dedicated to building productive, engaging, vital cultures through authentic leadership. He is also an incredible author of some books that I just love. Best-selling author, I should add. And the book that I've used so many times with leaders in my work is called Authentic Leadership. It's about presence, not position. And that's a book that he co-authored with Jim Regere. He's also the author of a number of other books and an expert in leadership, trust, and building teams and creating healthy, productive cultures. Welcome to the show, David.
Thank you. Pleasure.
And Christine, it's always great to be with you, and I'll pass it over to you to kick off the conversation with David.
That's great. Thank you so much, Charmaine. Great to be here, as always. David, I wanted to know, just as we're getting started, think win-win. Franklin Covey's habit of think win-win, that one stood out to you on the list. Can you tell us a little bit about why that is?
Well, first of all, let me give credit to the late Dr. Stephen Covey, who was a university of professor. I had class from him back in the 1970s when he was teaching university. And while he didn't, you can't copyright his ideas, he was a master at being able to package these ideas. This is not a new idea, but it's the way he's packaged it. It was just a wonderful how he packaged all these 7 habits. So I just want to give credit to the founder of these the packaging of these ideas. I'm very passionate about this particular habit because it's really the foundation of any successful relationship. Marriage, relationship with your kids, community, your friends, your business associates, clients, customers, boss, any relationship in your life, this is the foundation. Now, the foundation, obviously, of this habit is strong character that gets developed in habits number 1, 2, and 3, and this is why Dr. Covey just really built this whole process so well. But what I'm passionate about this is because it really is the foundation of relationships and how you have fulfilling, enriched relationships. And so that's why I'm passionate about it, because I'm passionate about connecting with people. I bring heart and soul into organizations in terms of how they connect, help people with their sales process around how they're making connections. And it's the essential nature of my whole work is how they build relationships based on this principle of win-win.
I just want to comment, David. I love the fact that you talk about heart and soul in business, because those are not words that we always hear in business. And a lot of the oil companies I work with, that is not a common language, yet it's so important, heart and soul, in the whole aspect of building relationships and teams, and certainly that win-win. And I know years ago when I was a mediator, that concept of thinking win-win was vital for organizations to work through these tough conversations and conflicts. And I'm really intrigued by your perspective on how win-win fits into dealing with those tough conversations that happen in workplace relationships.
Well, that's exactly it. It's around these difficult and fulfilling conversations that we have. So my whole approach around win-win is the notion that there's really two kinds of people in the world. There's givers and there's takers. Mm-hmm. And although one would hope that you can be a little bit of balance between both and have some balance, there's some fundamental a premise that you bring to the relationship. And that's what this principle talks about, not as much as a technique, but a fundamental philosophy that you bring into a relationship. So when you come into a relationship, takers have a what I call, well, you know, we all know people who take and suck the energy out of a relationship. And we know people who give, mm-hmm. and where you feel a sense of abundance. And the fundamental philosophy around takers is that there's a zero sum. It's a scarcity mentality. It treats relationships, if you're a taker, like a pie that says, you know what, I'm going to get the most out of this relationship that I possibly can. And there's only so much to go around. And the more I can get out of it, the better I'm going to be. And it's called a win-lose situation because it's all related to what can I get. Now, a win-win is really about an abundance mindset. It's not like a pie where there's only so much to go around. It's like love, that there's the more you love in a relationship, the more love there is in the relationship. You can't cut a love. I use love as a metaphor here, but you can't mm-hmm. cut love into a pie. There isn't just so much love to go around. We have an abundance mindset. So coming into a relationship with a win-win approach says there's lots to give here, and the more I give, the more I will receive. It comes back to an old quote by Zig Ziglar that you'll have everything you want in your life if you help enough people get what they want. But the premise, first of all, is how can I bring value to this relationship? And that's where it's a starting point in terms of it's from a giving place. What can I give? Where can I bring value in this relationship? And then, after you've given first, then there's an opportunity to say, okay, where must I bring courage so that I can have self-respect for myself, mm-hmm. so that I can also win in this relationship? And it's a perspective of how do we both get what we need and what we want. Now, we won't necessarily get everything that we want, but we will hopefully get everything that we need. But there's a premise, at least, that we want that to happen. It doesn't always happen, mm-hmm. but there's a basic fundamental approach that says that's what I'm committed to begin this relationship.
I think that is interesting because, you know, David, I'd love to get your opinion. I think of win-win and everything you just talked about, there being givers and there being takers. And I feel like in the business world, I see obviously those who kind of really live the habit of win-win on a regular basis, but I see two other things as well. I see people who won't give until they get. I think you kind of highlighted that. And then I've seen another thing that I think is interesting. I might look sometimes at win-win opportunities. My work with Charmaine is a great example of that, where we both said, hey, is there a win-win opportunity? And what I find is that people are really skeptical that you're going to be a taker. And they have a tendency, when you're starting to initiate a conversation about a win-win opportunity, to be very hesitant to move forward because they assume you're going to be a taker. So when you think about that, there's obviously places in our workplaces where we're falling down on this habit of think win-win. Do you have any ideas or tips on how you think people could actually transition from one state of mind to the next?
Yeah, absolutely. First of all, I think your point is well taken. We have not traditionally had a lot of role models in win-win relationships. A lot of us come into relationships distrusting because we have had takers. We've had people who have hurt us. We've had people who've taken from us. And we're always working with relationships where people are a little bit on, you know, from time to time, people are going to be on guard. So Covey had another very important principle called seek first to understand and then to be understood. It applies here in a very practical way where come into a relationship, seek first to add value and to understand other person win always before you come in to win. It must start with the other person. That's a very practical perspective. For example, I do a lot of work with salespeople, and I make this really practical. So I was working this morning with an organization who wants me to come in, and this is just exploring the option or the opportunity of me coming in and helping them align their culture, getting their senior managers involved, getting them aligned around values and vision, and then how do you get that level of alignment throughout the whole culture? So if I go into there from a sales perspective, I don't even think of it in terms of sales. What I say is, let me understand what you need. Let me understand what value you can, where can I add value to your culture before I even attempt to sell it? Because selling would be, okay, how can I win? I'm not even thinking that way when I go into a project like this. I'm thinking, how can I add value to you? And if I can't add value to you, then I'll find somebody who can add value to you so you will win. And in the long run, I know that I will win. Because if I can create value for you, I know that in return you'll create value for me. Now, when it comes down to what's the investment going to be, which is, you know, talking about how I win. First of all, I win by there being a values alignment. Mm-hmm. I win by having a fulfilling contract where I get a willing client, and I win because I sell a contract to them. But that comes way downstream. We don't even talk in terms of, as you would understand, Christine, from a sales perspective, you don't talk price until you talk value. And so that's where the win-win always starts, in the other person's camp. How can I help you win? And then I win second. Always I come in second. But I come in equal, but it always comes in after I've helped you win, and where you can see where you need to win. Does that make sense?
It makes total sense, and I think for a lot of people, it's such a big shift for them. But when they get it, you can watch their teams transform, their conversations change. Certainly, trust goes up. And I'm curious, David, do you have stories that come to mind from the different groups and organizations that you've worked with where you've seen people really struggle with this habit of thinking win-win?
Yes, people oftentimes, what I find is that people come in with a lot of fear, where you end up saying, you know what, I have been burned before. I've been, you know, I've been hurt before in one form or another, and I'm coming into a relationship guarded. And I always, you know, my experience is that it takes really two things to think win-win in terms of courage, which is about taking care of yourself, and then consideration, which is about really considering where the other person is at. And so when I'm working with a team, for example, that's learning how to think win-win, and I'm seeing a lot of people where maybe they've had a boss before, where or a colleagues before that have been takers and are reluctant to think win-win, I say, you know what, have courage to really, first of all, be considerate, because the goal in all initial negotiations with your colleagues, the goal always is understanding, not necessarily agreement. So simply by clarifying where I can bring value, what you want, how you can win, doesn't mean that I have to compromise myself. And if you can set that aside temporarily, the initial part of that, it's basic negotiations, which you would certainly understand. It's really understanding where the other person is coming from. And then you have the courage to say, you know, you may have to say, well, how can we negotiate so that we can both come out of this situation? So I'm trying to think of a specific example of a relationship. I remember a family business that I've been recently dealing with where I had a son and a father, and the son, they were trying to negotiate their succession plans, and the son was very adamant. He had an entitlement mindset that said, you know, what's in it for me? And he had a mindset of saying, thinking he was entitled to this business as the father grew out from behind the business, and they had a lot lot of tension between them. And what I help the father, first of all, do is to put himself in his son's perspective and to have the son put himself in the father's perspective. How can you help each other win? But they were very afraid to do that. Well, what about my needs and what about my desires? And first of all, I made it very clear that you'll never have a successful succession plan in a family business where a younger generation comes with a sense of entitlement. But that's right. A story for another time. but I really tried to help them put themselves in each other's shoes. How can you help your dad win? What's he asking for? And how can he help you win? And really negotiate from there. And there was a lot of reluctance, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, they're saying, yeah, but if I listen, that means I have to compromise myself. And you don't have to compromise anything to really help another person be understood and to clarify what they want. Now, when it gets down to both really understanding what each other wants, then you get down to a courageous conversation about what you're willing to give in order to make that happen. But that's downstream. And so often what happens is that we get into these fearful, difficult conversations because we're already defending ourselves before we've even let down our guard enough to even listen. Yeah. So I think that's the first thing that people need to get around win-win is listen first before we even have to negotiate what we're willing to give.
I think that's good. I'm even listening, and I'm listening very carefully before I share. It's funny, I was thinking about what you were saying with the courage and consideration, and I feel like you have to add one more word to that, which is curiosity. It's that curiosity, which I think is just what lights up really excellent listening, because it insinuates that your own needs aren't front and center.
You know, that's a great word to bring into a win-win relationship, is bring curiosity. Not defensiveness, because defensiveness just comes from fear. And this is where the first three steps are so fundamental in terms of the first three habits, in terms of letting go and having that character where you can let go of fear. But bringing curiosity is so fundamental, isn't it, to this win-win situation?
Yeah, it's significant. And I always think back to my days of mediation, because that's where I spent so much time in conflict, not my own conflict, but managing other people through it. And that's what I found, was when you could get people to a place of being purely curious, it was very hard for them to blame others or to be assumption-based or judgmental. And I really liked your comment, David, when you were talking about the importance of listening and having that courage, because putting yourself in another person's shoes is so difficult, but it just opens the door to different solutions. And I think back to one workplace that I worked with years ago, and there was a supervisor and a frontline supervisor that were having some difficulties in how to approach a project. The end goal they agreed on, but the challenge was the how. How do they want to go about it? And two very different perspectives. And I was really struggling to facilitate understanding between them. And then I decided partway through just to have them each check in with each other and paraphrase back basically what they heard the other person say. And it was so powerful to listen to what I heard as an objective outsider, so to speak, and what they heard. And it took a lot of work for them to get into the other person's shoes. And once they did that, the conflict almost solved itself, to be really honest. I became almost unneeded in the process because the conversation changed. The trust started to form at least enough in that moment for them to be courageously communicating around how to support one another in a win-win agreement.
I totally hear what you're saying, because so often we're reacting and defending ourselves, and we don't even understand what the other person is. We don't even understand what we're reacting to. We are reacting what we think the other person is saying. So it's a fundamental principle in relationships to clarify what exactly are they saying. What are they saying they need? What are they saying that can bring value? And we're so afraid to clarify that before we give our interests in that relationship, because we think that by clarifying it means I have to compromise myself. And again, clarity around what another person is really really saying that they value and what would bring value to them and what they're wanting in this situation has nothing to do with, it's totally separate mm-hmm. from what I can actually give them. Those are two separate things, and we've got to separate this, otherwise we get defensive right off the bat, which creates a defensive a scarcity mentality rather than an abundant win-win mentality.
So now, this is interesting. Well, I'm thinking about some of the different examples you've given. I'm thinking about my own experience in the world of business development and working alongside people who are in long sales cycles, working with large companies and trying to foster relationships. Should you walk away from a relationship when it's not win-win?
What I would say is you need to walk away from the relationship when there isn't goodwill. So I think one of the primary premises of this is assessing if there isn't goodwill. So in other words, if you're working in a relationship where the other person has no desire, has no respect. Let me give you an example of this. I was doing negotiating probably a few months ago with two senior executives. The CEO had asked me to come in to work with this company. And he said, we're losing about $1 million a day because of the conflict in these two divisions. And I want you to work with them and mediate and resolve this issue between them. And so the first question that I always ask, I take these people away and I say, my first question is, do you want this relationship to work? And I learned this as a marriage therapist years ago when I struggled for 6 months in my early days trying to get a couple together, trying to get them to work together. And after 6 months, I was exasperated and I said, listen, I'm done with you. I can't help you, but I have one question before you leave. I said, do you want the relationship to work? And it was the first time they'd ever agreed on anything. And they turned to each other and they said unanimously, no, we don't want this relationship to work. So I learned a really good question. I really learned something very important. Ask the question on the first session, do you want this relationship to work? And if you, what I got when I worked, and both parties have to want the relationship, have to have respect. I can help people build trust. I can help people communicate. I can help people clarify their values. But one thing I can never do as an outsider is I can never help people earn gain respect for each other. And if that respect is not there, then you have to separate the relationship and take away the interdependence between them. And I've discovered in this negotiating, we never got to the negotiating because one manager said, no, I have absolutely no respect for this other manager, and I have no interest in negotiating this. So I went back to the CEO and I said, you're wasting your money to have me negotiate this because there's no goodwill. And in Covey's words, there's not a think-win-win in this relationship. There's not a commitment to do that. Now, there may not be initially, but there has to be a spark mm-hmm. that says, I have a desire to work toward win-win. And what he had to do is he had to separate these two and demote one of them and say, you know what, you can't be negotiating. You can't work together. So you can't have interdependence without respect of each other. You don't have to necessarily agree with each other. You don't have to like each other, but you have to have that respect. And that has to be, you always start from a premise that we're going to have a win-win here. But if you get to a point in that negotiating where the respect and the goodwill is not there, then you have to end the interdependence. Mm-hmm. In family businesses, what I run into all the time is if there's two brothers, for example, or two siblings who just simply have no respect for each other, it's pointless to negotiate a win-win relationship. What we do is that we restructure the business so they can work separately, so they don't have to have interdependence with each other, and then they can at least maintain a family relationship with each other without killing each other and without destroying the relationship in the business.
What a great example, and I think we can all relate to something similar. It reminds me, actually, of a group that I worked with who were having a number of team issues, and there was just a real culture of disrespect. Some of the things that the team were saying to each other, I felt the offense that people would felt and feel there, and I was, of course, an outside facilitator. And I think your question that you raised, David, about asking the big, important question at the onset is so critical, because I've seen lots of people try and take a team or two people who are experiencing a challenge down a path that one of them clearly is not going to play fair, has no desire to resolve it, you know, really is inspired to keep the dance of conflict alive or keep those fires burning. And it can be so detrimental to the other person or people to move them through that process when one person absolutely is completely uncommitted.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. I remember Covey being asked a question by a participant in a workshop. How do you think win-win with a terrorist? And he said, you don't. You say, these are the consequences. If you act in a terrorist way, you don't negotiate with a terrorist. A true terrorist who has essentially no goodwill for the betterment of all stakeholders.
Yeah.
David, you've brought me some peace because I have walked away from some situations where I just didn't see the opportunity to think win-win. And I'd say there's many habits that I need to continue to practice, but think that win-win is always, that one for me is always kind of front and center, and it's one that I try to approach a lot of relationships with. And I thought that your explanation of how to decide how to walk away if there's not goodwill present, that kind of gave me some reinforcement about a couple of decisions. So I think that's great.
Be careful because you don't want to assess that too early,
mm-hmm.
but there has to be that spark, right, of goodwill and desire.
And I think that sometimes can be difficult to figure out how quickly you can assess that, and sometimes you have to put in that goodwill first and make sure that that truly is the case on the other side of the fence before you make that determination. So
yeah, and you try it. My general rule is try three times to really try to get to a win-win, and if you're just not there in three attempts, there's probably a good indicator that, you know what, maybe we need to separate and just not do this anymore.
Excellent point.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much. We have just wrapped up the half hour, so I am going to ask you, David, if you've got any takeaways or action items that you'd like our listening audience to jot down as they're leaving this conversation.
Yes, always start with helping the other person win first.
Mm.
That's great.
That's the primary takeaway.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry about that, David. And Charmaine, do you have something that you'd like to add to that?
Let me add about what David said about making sure your values are in alignment. This is critical, and I know that even as a private practitioner, as a consultant with my own business, I have to carefully choose my clients, too, and I'm always going to keep that question in mind. Are my values and the client's values aligned so that we can work together well?
I think that's also a very excellent point. And I think the piece that I picked up in, David mentioned courage and consideration. And like I said, I like the idea of curiosity. I feel like all those in reflection as well, I really heard him say that fear really can kill a win-win working relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and you must deal often offline, not in that relationship, but you must bring a courage, which is obviously the replacement to fear. You must work out your fear first before you come into that relationship. Get a support system in your own life so that you can find a way of coming into that relationship without fear overriding this, because fear will always override the principle of win-win.
Mm.
Well, thank you so much, and this has been another excellent discussion. I appreciate your time, David. This was great. Thank you so much, and I hope everyone out there has an excellent day.
Thank you, everyone.